You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Lightning fans, you found the right show for everything you need to know about your favorite team in the NHL. It's the Lightning Insider Podcast with Eric Erlandson. Get ready for insight, historical perspective, interviews, and breaking news that comes from a reporter insider who's got near 20 years on the Tampa Bay Lightning beat. Now for the latest with the Lightning, here's Eric.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Lightning Insider Podcast. I am Eric Erlandson, your host from Lightning Insider.com. Don't forget, we still have a special promo if you want to sign up and subscribe to my website, where you can get some more detailed information on what goes on with this team and some insight into what takes place beyond just this podcast. If you use the promo podcast when you sign up, I'm going to give you $10 off your first year of subscription. That's lightninginsider.com. You go to the homepage, the first thing you see is the sliding scale, and just click on that and then sign up for the yearly plan. Again, $10 off if you use the promo code podcast. All right, lot to digest again here as we are on back-to-back nights with the Tampa Bay Lightning in their second round series against the Boston Bruins. Tampa Bay with a 7-1 victory. You heard that right. 7-1 victory over the Boston Bruins in the second night of back-to-backs. You know, they had played on Tuesday. They come back on Wednesday and play again the next night, and it's not an easy situation in the playoffs. It's a little unusual in the postseason, but full marks to the Lightning for taking advantage of that. We're going to talk about the power play tonight, how it worked for the first time since the playoffs began. Again, I don't count the round robin in that situation, but in the playoffs, they came in 0-for through their first seven games of the postseason. Really came through tonight. I'm going to give you some really good thoughts on why it worked so well tonight. We're going to talk about a comment that Keith Jones made during the first intermission tonight on the NBC broadcast. Something that I think kind of speaks a little too much to the culture of hockey. So I'm going to touch on that a little bit, and we're going to give you the bigger picture of what this result means, the 7-1 victory that Tampa Bay had tonight. Nikita Kucherov, by the way, sets a personal playoff record with 4 points. He had a goal and 3 assists in this game tonight. And before we get too deep into the other stuff, I'm going to run the stat by him because I hear this a lot. I hear this almost every single playoffs here the last couple years, where I get plenty of people who tell me Nikita Kucherov never shows up for the playoffs. Never shows up. He disappears. You can't find Nikita Kucherov. Well, I'm going to give you the stat, and I know this isn't tell everything about somebody's playoffs, but since 2014, when Kucherov came into the league, the only player who has more points, more playoff points than Nikita Kucherov is Sidney Crosby. Sidney Crosby has 84 points in 86 playoff games since 2014. Nikita Kucherov is second on this list with 75 points in 76 career games. So that's an incredible number. It kind of speaks to how much he shows up in the playoffs. Has there been some instances where maybe he hasn't been, what's the best way to say it, there for certain games? I mean, look, it's, you want to call it recency bias? That's a term. We're going to use recency bias because the fact that the Lightning got shut out in Game 6 and 7 against the Capitals in 2018 in the Eastern Conference Finals, that's fair. Struggled last year in the postseason against Columbus, but who didn't? And ended up taking a bad hit that got him suspended for a game. I get it. But if you want to look at the bigger picture, and I try to do that a lot, look at the bigger picture of things with Nikita Kucherov, 75 points in 76 career games. That's almost a point per game performer in the postseason. And I think anybody would take that. You know, this isn't the wide open 80s. You know, you're not getting Wayne Gretzky averaging 5 points a night. It's an exaggeration. He didn't really average 5 points a night in the postseason. But so that's just a stat I wanted to make sure that we kind of got out there, because that's going to lead into my first topic, and that is the power play. 0 for 15 heading into tonight's game. Well, Wednesday night's game. And a lot of discussion around it. You knew that you couldn't continue to struggle with the man advantage, that you were going to have to make the Bruins pay at some point, because the Bruins were scoring on their power play. They had a power play in the first game, ended up being a one-goal game. That's the difference. They have a power play game in game two, takes you to overtime for Tampa Bay to win and Andre Palat's winner. And then into tonight's game two, guess what the Bruins did? They scored their only goal on the power play. So you better not continue to lose that special teams battle. Well, tonight they did not. They had the first power play opportunity, didn't do a whole lot with it, but then the floodgates opened up. And the floodgates opened up because of something we had talked about on the previous podcast with the change of positions for the players. Right, Nikita Kucherov moved over to the left circle, where Steven Stamkos usually is, instead of his spot on the right circle. So Nikita Kucherov is now on the left. Andre Palat is over on the right circle. Mikhail Sergachev still running the center point, and then you still have Alex Killorn and Braden Point, sort of net front, bumper position, puck retrieval. That's their role on the power play. But what you saw tonight was, you hear the term a lot, quarterback on the power play, right? That means they're the person who's in charge of it. Normally, that's the person at the center point. But not all power plays run with a guy at the center point. Some power plays will run from a guy on the half wall. And it's called the half wall because that's where the hash marks are. It's about halfway through the zone. So about halfway down that wall, that's why they call it working off the half wall. When Nikita Kucherov ran the power play tonight as well as I've ever seen anybody run a power play from the half wall position. Because this is what happened. On the first goal, this is Andre Palat's goal that put Tampa Bay ahead 1-0. It comes in the first period at the 12:46 mark. So there's puck movement. Something that I didn't think they was doing enough of. You got to get the players in the Bruins, you know, their box set up. You got to give them, move them. You got to have some quick puck movement. Sometimes that opens up the seam passes, but other times you just make a move looking for an opportunity to shoot a puck without a blocker, somebody to block the shot in front of you. And that happened on the first one. It went from Kucherov on the half wall to Sergachev at the point, over to Andre Palat for a one-timer. The puck actually deflected off the stick of Zdeno Chara into the back of the net. So Andre Palat now has his second goal of the playoffs, 12:46 mark. So ends the 0 for 15 drought, actually 0 for 16 at that point because they had the power play again in the opening minute of the first period. So power play worked there. Yanni Gourde scores 15 seconds later, it's the fastest two goals in Lightning playoff history. Got a little bit of a break as Jeremy Lauzon ran into the linesman who set a perfect pick play to allow Gord to get to the net unimpeded, and he scores the goal. Again, two goals, 15 seconds apart. It's 2-0. So that carries over into the second period, and this is where the power play really, really came to life, and you could really see the thought process of a guy like Nikita Kucherov, because they get the power play opportunity again early in the second period. Patrice Bergeron in the box for high-sticking Andre Palat. And what you saw in these next two goals, they're so great to talk about, because on the first one, again, running the power play from the half wall spot, Nikita Kucherov is over on the wall and he takes the puck down low. Like, he is down below the hash marks, almost to the bottom of the circle. And when he does that, that draws the attention. We've talked about how much they're keen on Kucherov in these situations. It really draws the attention of the penalty killers down low with them. So now they tighten that box a little bit. And what does Kucherov do? He sends a puck back to the center slot where Mikhail Sergachev is able to take about two or three strides down from the blue line and fire off a one-timer, because he's got nobody in front of him. He's got a pretty good lane to shoot the puck. And it was a blistering one-timer. Ends up with a back to the net, 2:14 in. Boston gets a power play goal of their own. For the love of all that is good and evil, could somebody make sure they find where Brad Marchand is hanging out at that post, because he did it again, just standing there at the post, and a shot pass from Torrey Krug goes off his skates and in the net. So it's a 3-1 game at this point. It's a little over 2 minutes after Tampa Bay takes a 3-0 lead. So it's a game again, right? Well, this is where the power play once again comes to, I don't want to say the rescue, but really makes their stamp on this game. Charlie McAvoy takes a roughing call for trying to go after Nikita Kucherov, and this is why you have to make teams pay. So on this particular goal, Alex Colonna is going to get the goal. It's on a rebound in front. But again, it's all set up from Nikita Kucherov. Because if you go back and you watch the tape, he actually starts the play by being outside of the zone. Something you don't see very often on a power play. You see it on occasion. But he exits the zone, and 5 feet maybe outside the zone, circles back. And now all of a sudden, he's coming into the zone. The pass comes back to him. He's got some speed to him. So now the penalty killers have to respect Nikita Kucherov coming at them with some speed. Well, what does he do? Because he comes in with the speed, it again opens up the opportunity for a cross-seam pass to open up. It opens up those lanes that the Bruins are so good at closing down. He gets it over to Palat. Palat gets the shot on goal. Alex Killorn gets the rebound. The 3-goal lead is restored. It's 4-1 at that point, and he just kind of felt the game was over, because it wasn't too long after that that the Bruins pulled Yaroslav Halak. And I had this question from Stephanie earlier. He was not pulled because he was playing poorly. He was pulled because they wanted to give him rest. At that point, I think the Bruins realized the game was probably over at that point. There's no reason. You're going to need Halak for the rest of the series. So pull him at that point and take care of it. So that's what happened. And basically, the game is over. The Lightning, look, the Bruins did a very poor job of protecting their goalie. This is Dan Vladar. Vladar, I believe is how his name is pronounced. Didn't do a very good job of protecting him, because Braden Point scores on a breakaway. And then right at the end of the second period, Yanni Gord gets a breakaway. And though Vladar makes the save, Killorn is there for the rebound. He pots it in. And then early in the third period, Point and Kucherov have a mini two-on-one. And Kucherov is able to kind of slip the puck through the five hole. I know there's a question about this a little bit, so I won't answer it here. But, you know, so 3:58, it's a 7-1 game. So I think the Bruins kind of knew it was over at 4-1. They probably knew they didn't have the energy to try and come back down. Even though we've seen 3-goal comebacks in this playoffs, including earlier today when the Islanders came down from 3-0 against the Philadelphia Flyers before the Flyers won that game in overtime. I think they felt the game was probably over. So that is the change on the power play. We've been looking for it to happen, and it happened in this game, and boy, did they get the results as a power play. They end up on the score sheet 3-for-6, but you scored 3 straight power play goals, and you made the Bruins pay. If they're going to take penalties, they now have to understand the power play worked this night, and they've got an opportunity to kind of keep it going, probably with some of the same looks. But just, again, watching Nikita Kucherov work that power play and what he was able to do with the puck and open up opportunities that just hadn't been there with him over on the circle, where it was too easy for the PK to focus in on him and take him away. They took him away. Well, now with this movement and him working off the half wall, it's a different look for the Bruins to see, and they didn't do a very good job of defending it. I expect we'll probably see that again in Friday's Game 4. All right, the second thing I wanted to bring up is the comment that Keith Jones made tonight. I'm sure some of you on Twitter probably saw it, but if you didn't, there was a situation in the first period of the game where Brandon Carlo, Bruins defenseman, tried to get Anthony Cirelli, goad him into a fight. And Carlo actually dropped his gloves. Cirelli kind of looked at him like, I'm not going. So he just kind of picked up his gloves and went back to play. Well, first of all, that's supposed to be an automatic unsportsmanlike misconduct or unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. Was not called, play went on. And that's fine. That's not the issue here. When it got to the intermission, and Keith Jones, who played the game, and he played the game hard, I have a lot of respect for guys that have played this game for sure, but when he makes a comment that it's not a good look for Cirelli to not answer the challenge that Carlo put towards him, not a good look. So here's what's happening. Keith Jones is basically challenging Anthony Cirelli's manhood, if you will. Oh, somebody challenges you, have to fight. It's a problem with hockey culture. It's too much of an old school thought in hockey culture that if somebody challenges you a fight, you have to stand up or you are classified as something that I'm not going to say on the show. And I think that's wrong because I look at it from this aspect. First of all, had Carlo been called for a penalty like he should have been, boy, would that have been a smart play. That would have been a brilliant play to get a power play out of it. But they didn't, and that's fine. Anthony Cirelli is a very smart hockey player. He's got no reason to go into a fight in that situation. You know, and look, he was kind of the guy on that game on March 7th that was kind of stirring up the most you-know-what. Especially when it came to Marchand, I don't know what's his name this week. So maybe that's in the back of the Bruins' mind, even though that was 5 months ago. Oh, geez, almost 6 months ago now. But Anthony Cirelli is a smart, smart player. He understands what his role is on this team. His job is to match up against Patrice Bergeron. And we talked about this in the last podcast about how John Cooper trusts his players, even when things may not be going right, to get the job done. So he knows that that's his job. Well, if he gets into a fight, first of all, that takes him off the ice for 5 minutes. So that's 5 minutes somebody else is going to have to match up against Bergeron. And we know how dangerous the Bergeron line is. So he doesn't put himself into a situation to take himself off the ice. And he's not unnecessarily risking an injury. This team is already missing Steven Stamkos. They're already missing Ryan McDonagh, who again didn't play tonight. So for Keith Jones to call out Anthony Cirelli on national television and say he didn't stand up and honor the code, I think the code in hockey is a bunch of crap. There's no code. You go out and you try and help your team win the game. This is not young blood. Right? He doesn't owe Brandon Carlo anything. Cirelli didn't do anything that would warrant that he has to stand up for it. And we see this way too many times in hockey now, right? A guy has to stand up for a clean hit because that's the code. I don't like the code. Hate the code. I know a lot of guys today still abide themselves by the hockey code. I didn't like Keith Jones calling out Anthony Cirelli on national TV for that reason.
Don't be left out. Make sure you subscribe to the Lightning Insider on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else where podcasts are found. Now, here again is Eric.
All right, the bigger picture situation here. And I know somebody who's been asking some questions here of late said he doesn't have a question tonight. I just want to thank you for being a voice of reason when folks start to panic. I value your perspective of highs and lows. So this is at ARNDTJC on Twitter. So it didn't ask a question, but this is a good comment because it leads directly into what I'm going to talk about right here now. This is the playoffs. This is not soccer. There's no aggregate involved. You either win the game or you lose the game. Tonight, the Lightning won the game. The final result doesn't really matter. It's lopsided, pad some stats. It looks good. For those of you who are so emotionally invested, you had to kind of had a little sit back and relax type of third period. Right? So, but that's all this was one game. So just as I talked about after game one, in the postseason, you can't ride the roller coaster. You can't get too high on the emotions or too low on the emotions. You have to understand it's a series. And that's the same situation here. 7-1 victory. It looks nice, but all that matters is the victory. The Tampa Bay Lightning now have a 2-1 series lead. And that's all this is a 2-1 series lead. The Boston Bruins are a very, very good team. Yes, they have the star power, and that top line is the best line in hockey, and they ride a lot. If that line's going, it's a good chance the team is going to win. But they don't have, but they have such a disciplined approach to their game. They do not beat themselves many nights. Tonight, in some ways, they beat themselves with some of the bad penalties they took, and the Lightning made a pay for it. But for the most part, this is as disciplined a structural team as you're going to find in the NHL. And they will feast on your mistakes. So if you don't make mistakes, you're going to make it harder for the Bruins to win the game. You have to almost, in some ways, outweigh them. So when we get to Friday's game four, you have to push this game as far in the rearview mirror to where you can't even see it anymore. You have to put your approach on exactly what is in front of you. And don't think that just because you won a game 7-1 in game three has zero to do with how game four is going to play out. So this is what I talk about with the emotions. Don't get yourself caught up in every win means you've got the cup coming. Every loss means the season is over. It's just one victory, but it was a good one. And there's a lot of stats here. I gave you the one about Kucherov and tying or setting a career high with 4 points. Alex Kalorn had 3 points. Mikhail Sergachev had 3 points. So there's some stat padding going on in this game. And look, the Lightning, they pulled in the reins a little bit. There's no doubt because there's a couple of key things that happen in a game like this. And the first is the ice time. You're on back-to-back nights. You'll have a blowout game. So this gives you the opportunity to say, oh, I don't know, give Victor Hedman just 18 minutes of ice time and only 2 shifts in the third period. I like that. Take some of those heavy minutes away. Hedman has been up around 25, 26, 27 minutes most night. Had 57 minutes in the 5-overtime game. Played 27 minutes last night because there's no Ryan McDonagh. So that gives you an opportunity to really spread out the ice time and take some of that burden away from your top guys. Right? Cirelli only played 15 minutes tonight. Kucherov, just under 16 minutes. Braden Point, 15 minutes. So your heavy minute guys, for the most part, were allowed to kind of maybe take some back because you never know how much you're going to need in reserve in the tank. So the less you can play today, maybe the more quality minutes you're going to have later in the series. It's a big factor in a game like this. But again, just kind of keep in mind, all this is one game. You have a 2-1 series lead, and that's it. One other thing I wanted to bring up, and this is something to just keep an eye on here, because this is unusual. Talked in the, I think after game one, about Patrice Bergeron, who was 63% in the faceoff circle. He was about 62% in game two. And that's when the Lightning had the matchup situation. So in theory, that should favor Tampa Bay a little bit. Well, guess what? Tonight, score might have dictated some of this. Bergeron only took 10 faceoffs. First of all, he usually takes 60% of their faceoffs. Tonight, he had the fewest of their centers. Because Charlie Coyle, who gets a little more ice time because of the score, ends up taking 16. Par Lindholm took 12. David Krejci took 13. So the Lightning actually won the faceoff battle tonight, 55% to 45%. But the thing about Bergeron, who only went 4 for 10, so he's only at 40%, so 10 is a low number. But I looked halfway through the first period, he hadn't taken any. I think at that point in time, there might have been 10, 12 faceoffs, somewhere in that range. He hadn't taken any. And I'm not saying this means anything, but it's something worthwhile to keep an eye on. And look, the Bruins are able to curtail their minutes on their top guys because Bergeron only played 13 minutes. Brad Marchand only played 15 minutes. David Pastrnak, who we know is banged up, did get 18 minutes. But it's just something interesting and curious to keep an eye on. All right, let's take questions here, and we will wrap up the show. We'll be back with another podcast after Friday's Game 5. That game on Friday is scheduled to be a 7:30 start, so just keep that in mind. Friday's Game 4 is a 7:30 p.m. Eastern start. All right, the questions. Let me scroll down here to get to them. Do my best. Deep questions tonight, guys. I love it. Will Lightning ever eclipse their 8-goal playoff record? That obviously came in a little bit earlier from Alex Selivanov. Didn't get to it. What was the most lopsided game the Bruins lost this season? Last time they lost in the playoffs by 4-plus goals. I don't know the answer to those ones off the top of my head. That's from Jordan Palladino. I did hear the stat that it's the worst playoff loss for the Bruins since 93. I think I read that right. Did I read 8-3? I think they lost that game to the Sabres. Again, that's just what I heard at the end of the telecast tonight. I don't know about the Bruins lopsided one. I'll see if I can get that to you, Jordan, before I sign off here. From Sharon, who is at BoltsFan2029, did Kucherov just use his little trick shot on that goal? I don't think he did. I think he had his stick disrupted as he was going to make a move or a shot, and then he was able to kind of get his stick at the last second and poke the puck at the end of the move there. So I don't think it was the Kucherov move that he's done to Braden Holtby a couple of times and Robin Leonard. From Tampa Sports Girl, so what did you think triggered the spark of the power play? I touched on that. I think it was the movement and sticking Kucherov over there and letting him run the power play as a quarterback on the half wall. I thought he did it really, really well. From Colton, COJOSIP11 on Twitter, what does this year's playoff performance so far mean for Tyler Johnson's future with the Lightning? I mean, he falls into that range of potential guys that could be moved in the offseason. I know there's a lot of people who want to talk about Seattle coming in the league, the Seattle Kraken coming into the league. That is not going to happen until after next offseason. So there are cap issues and contract issues the Lightning are going to have to deal with this offseason, which will be in October. So he just falls into that range. I don't think that these whatever moves the Lightning are going to have to make this summer are going to fall into the performance category. I think they're going to be more business related and contract related. Does performance tie into it a little bit? Potentially. But there's still some playoffs to go, so we'll see how that shakes out for Tyler Johnson. From Kevin, when did Nesson take over for NBC? I'm used to the bias, but my goodness, this is bad. Yeah, I noticed that, especially towards the end of the game. All they started talking about, what did the Bruins have to do to bounce back, rather than talking about what the Lightning did right tonight. I wish I had a good answer for you, Kevin, but I don't. Again, remember, for years I was at these games, so I wasn't able to hear some of what a lot of people would talk to me about. But it is noticeable, I think, in some ways. I think there's more what went wrong for the other team than what went right for the Lightning when you're sort of analyzing things a little bit. Some praise for Tampa tonight, but not as much as you would think for a team that won a game 7-1. From Stephanie, if McDonough is ready to go for game 4, do you still think that they go 11-7? And if so, who do you sit? Well, if McDonough's healthy, and that's a big question mark, obviously, I think you go back to 12-6, most likely. But we'll see. And if they do stick to 11-7, well, it's a tough one. I've liked how both Shen and Coburn have played, but I think if you sort of looked at the depth chart, I would have Coburn just ahead of Shen. I know there's some, including I think Fabio, if he's listening, probably disagree with me there. But I would put Coburn just slightly ahead. So if we're talking taking one of them out, it's probably going to be Luke Shen. From Volty, love this, VOLTTYY underscore. Do you think Tampa is more effective running 11-7 as opposed to 12-6? It's a small sample size, but I personally like the mix up of forwards and defensemen. I'm a fan of 11-7. I'm not a fan of an 11-7 all the time because it can tax your forwards maybe a little bit more. It gets your defense out of rhythm a little bit, because you're used to rolling six and it's set pairs sometimes, and now you've got to find a way to rotate in that seventh guy. So there are disadvantages to an 11-7 format. I think when this team is fully healthy, and we know they're not right now because they're missing Steven Stamkos, I think one of their strengths is their depth on forward. I think when they're fully healthy, they're a much better 12-6 team. Again, I like the matchup situation it can create and the opportunities to get some of your top guys out there for some additional double shifting. It can create a matchup issue in your favor. I think this team is better suited 12-6, but there are times that I like the 11-7, and certainly it's paid off here in games 2 and 3. From Hockey Bryant, why does the national broadcast have such an issue with continuing to focus on original six teams, bigger market teams, and old-time hockey versus being able to celebrate good players on non-traditional market teams? The third period commentary was egregiously one-sided. I am not a fan of this whole romantic idea of the original six. Can we just do away with it, please? It's been 40 years. It's been more than 40 years since the league is expanded from the original six. Can we please move along from that? I don't understand the romance with it that the league still has, or even still hats, original six hats. Oh, the mystique of the original six. Not a fan of it. The bigger markets, that's a television thing, right? Like, they're chasing ratings. The higher the ratings, the more they can charge advertisers, the more money they can make back from the money that they paid to the league to broadcast their games. So I don't know why. I've said this many, many times before. The league, the NHL, thrives despite those who run it, and I don't think they do a very good job of marketing things. And I saw this back in 2004 when Marty St. Louis was going from an undrafted, unwanted player to a league MVP, an undersized player. I thought his story should have been pushed out there so everywhere. But the NHL does not like pushing individual stories. They like pushing teams and markets. That's why you see the Buffalo Sabres on national TV so much. They have the longest playoff drought in the NHL currently, but they're on national TV all the time because what do they bring in? They bring in ratings. From Brandon McClellan, Coaster Ball on Twitter. What do the Bolts let, or why? Well, why do the Bolts let Marchand just sit next to the right post? They have been burned three times. Thanks for the question, Brandon. Excellent question. Once bitten, twice shy. What does that mean the third time? I don't know. Marchand just does very good getting lost behind the net and then finding his way to the post, and we've seen it. Alex Killorn has forgot he was there. Anthony Cirelli has forgot he was there. Victor Hedman forgot he was there. You have to be so aware of where he is, and certainly the Lightning haven't learned their lesson. You just got to have to put your head on a swivel, don't watch the puck so much, and understand who's behind you because he's so dangerous there. From our friend PRZEMEK_DZ, two short questions. Is Cooper safe now? Look, you're only three games into round two. You have a 2-1 series lead. You can't judge anything right now on where the team is at. But I've said it before. I think John Cooper has done his best coaching job this year with what the team struggled through early on and what they did over the summer to try and readjust and tweak some things. They didn't blow it up like a lot of people wanted, but they tweaked some things. I think you've seen some adjustments here in the playoffs that I think are paying dividends. I think you're seeing John Cooper's best coaching job this year. If Tampa does advance to the next round, what team is a better matchup? I just want to know who to cheer for in the other series. I hope in game four we won't play sloppy because they won tonight 7-1. I don't know who's necessarily the better matchup. I think the Flyers have more dangerous players, but I think the Islanders have played as the best team in this playoffs. They have played as the best team in this playoffs, and the Islanders can be a frustrating team to play against, as frustrating as it was against the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Islanders can be just as frustrating because they pack it in on their own end as well, but they counter better than the Blue Jackets do. They have more speed than the Blue Jackets do. So you have to really play a patient game against the Islanders. I don't know which one is necessarily the better matchup, but I know the Islanders, I think, are playing as the best team right now. From Bob, as you've been in a room a lot after games like this, what do coaches say to a lopsided winning team or avoid overconfidence going into the next game? Or is it not needed at this level? Expect Boston to come out with foaming mouths Friday after an embarrassment. Yep, that's why I said this is just one game. There's no aggregate score here. You just won a game. Doesn't matter how you won it. Last night it was an overtime one-goal game, 4-3. Tonight it's 7-1. Doesn't mean you've won the last two games by a combined 11-4 score. It just means you've won both those games. You don't really need to say anything. I think there's a lot of mutual respect between the Bruins and the Lightning, as emotional as some of these games have been, as this little bit of a rivalry has sort of bubbled up here. I'm sure they will, and they're aware of it. If you listen to the post-game press conferences tonight, I sort of asked both John Cooper and Alex Killorn the same question, and even John Cooper said it. Tonight was an aberration. It was an aberration. This is the first game that the Lightning have played in the playoffs to this point that has not been decided by a goal. So you have to expect closer games, tighter games. The Bruins are going to be much better, and the Lightning understand that. From Evgeny Lightning fan, who's one Bolt Nation, I have more of a statement than a question, but was hoping to hear your thoughts on this. Boston can't hang with the Lightning 5-on-5. They don't have enough depth outside the Bergeron line. This series could be 3-0 if the Bolts didn't take silly penalties in game one. Well, the Lightning could have done themselves better with a better start in game one. Certainly the Bruins scored their power play goal, ended up being the difference in the game. But I agree with you. And before the series started, I asked John Cooper that exact question. How important is it for the Lightning to keep this series 5-on-5? And I don't think the Bruins have the depth to skate with the Lightning when it's a 5-on-5 game. I think we've seen that specifically in these last two games. They can't do it. They thrive on their power play, and they thrive on turnovers, especially with that top team on the ice. It's how they scored their third goal in game one, was a turnover. If you don't feed the Bruins, you're going to have a better chance to win the game. Keep it 5-on-5 and don't turn over the puck. I think the Lightning easily win this series. put the Bruins on the power play too much, they're going to burn you. They've scored 3 power play goals already in this series. Almost identical goals. So I totally agree that if the Lightning keep this series at 5-on-5 as much as possible, I think it benefits them more than it certainly does the Bruins. And the last question from Lee Encinoza, what is the number of games a player needs to play to have his name on the cup? This is a question that comes up every year about this time. The standard is if you appeared in at least half of the regular season games or one game in the Stanley Cup final, that's usually the criteria for it. So long way to go before we get there, but it is something to kind of think about no matter who wins the Stanley Cup this year. All right, that's going to wrap it up. I know we've kind of gone a little long tonight with all the questions, but I love the questions. I really appreciate it. I'll be back again with a post-game podcast after Game 5 on Friday. So again, that's a 7:30 p.m. start, Boston Bruins and Tampa Bay Lightning. The Lightning now lead the series 2-1, but expect a much different-looking Boston Bruins team on Friday night. Thanks, everyone, as always, for the questions. Make sure you check out my website, lightninginsider.com. Make sure you hit review, share, 5-star review on this on Apple, especially if you're listening to it on Apple. That goes a long way in helping this podcast grow. So any of that you can do, I truly, truly appreciate it. Thanks, as always, for the support, and I'll be back on Friday.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.